Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
There are a lot of positives in college today, across the board. Great stories, one after another. Kids working hard, kids having fun as they do certain things, living a college life. Miles, I'll give you a good story. Miles Diefenbach, his father's the head tennis coach at Pitt. So Miles was a really good tennis player growing up. And, in fact, tennis goes through his great-grandfather was a fine tennis player, too. Well, here at Penn State, he plays table tennis. And he's really good at it. Really good. So a couple of his teammates get together and they say, hey, you know what? They have the Keystone Games going on in Harrisburg. You ought to enter this darn thing. So Diefenbach says, yeah, sure. What the heck? You know, I mean, because I guess he's really, really good at it. So these guys get together and they all drive down together to Harrisburg. And Diefenbach wins the Keystone Games gold medal. Now, the joke is he beat a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old, okay? But that's college. Those are college guys doing a college thing. That's what you do in college. You get together as a group and you go down and the whole thing. And then, all right, and they do something like that. Now, there's no money involved. There's no booster, no payola, no whatever. It's just a group of guys getting together and they go down. You know, with their buddy, and they enter their buddy into the state table tennis tournament, and he wins the state championship, and then they razz him for weeks and weeks and weeks that he beat a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old. But that's college. Okay? What the allegations are at Oklahoma State, that's not college. That's not what college is about. Right? So there's fun things like that that happen. Thunderstorm warning for Montour, Columbia, Northumberland, Lycoming, and Union counties, by the way. They've come through here. That's why I know. Tony and Shamokin. Hi, Tony. It's our pleasure at 800-795-9565.
Hey, good afternoon. This paying college players, to me, this is a Pandora's box. I mean, what's the logical conclusion? A quarterback at Notre Dame, is he going to get paid more than, say, the third-string right guard at Indiana? Who's going to set up the payment system? And as you go on in this, are five-star recruits going to get offered more than two-star recruits? I mean, where does it end? Once you start, you know what it's going to lead to.
And the other part, too, is, Tony, Title IX enters into this.
Right.
You cannot look at football players or men's basketball players, which are the only two sports that make money in intercollegiate athletics. You can't just say that they're the ones that get the stipends. Title IX says everybody has to have a stipend.
That's right.
And I mean, Jim Delaney, when he was talking in the summer, I apologize for 1 second, Tony. Jim Delaney was saying it should be full scholarship athletes. Well, to be honest with you, most of the minor sports have divided scholarships. There are very few full scholarship players in the non-revenue sports.
I just personally think this is something that does not need to be done. Like you mentioned numerous times, the cost of a college education alone is payment enough, I think. But, I mean, once it starts, it's never going to end, and you're going to get down to where five-star recruits are getting paid more than two-star recruits. And then you get into the games that will be played amongst the recruiting services.
Well, according to the rule, you and I, of course, know how the rule could end up playing out. But according to the rule, everybody gets the same amount.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Once you open the door, we'll see.
Right.
You know.
I understand the skepticism.
Yep.
Tony, I understand the skepticism. I do.
Yep.
Very much so.
Okay.
Thanks, my friend. Tony in Shamokin, always with a great call to get things rolling. How do you feel about that? The Oklahoma State payment situation. I mean, West Virginia is looking into their end of it because now he's an associate head coach here as well. Look, you have different personalities that you deal with along the way. And not everyone had the same personality in terms of how to conduct themselves in their job. And people have pressure to win. They have a pressure to move up. But I'll tell you right now, never forget this part. The kids also know that they're not supposed to take it. It's 2013. Okay? They all know they're not supposed to be taking cash. It goes two ways. That's why I've always talked and preached about, you know, and it is preaching, that the individuals need to be punished and not the program. Unless you find out the administration is deeply involved in it. But you go after the individuals, player and coach, or staff member, that you find that there's proof that they're involved, and it's beyond a shadow of a doubt. Because the other thing you don't want to do is that you don't want to falsely wreck reputations either. That's why it has to be beyond a shadow of a doubt when something like this happens. But individuals need to be targeted instead of targeting programs. And you also have to get both sides of the story, too. I mean, putting out one side of a story and, you know, everybody sits there and reads it and goes, oh, okay. You have to have both sides. That's called fairness. And I think everyone knows how I feel about fairness and truth and also about getting both sides of the story. By the way, something really nice is coming up this weekend. Now, this is something the fans, I just want the fans just to be aware of. But in just a few days, Fran Fischer is going to celebrate his 90th birthday. And I'd like to open up the phones at 800-795-9565. And I want to see if fans have recollections of Fran Fischer. And because when you've been for decades a statewide figure with like he's been, who's given back so much like he has, I'm sure in some way or another, whether listening to him, seeing him on TV, or actually meeting him, you would have a recollection of what he has meant to Penn State, or maybe even more personal. And our number is 800-795-9565. That is 800-795-9565. I know, Kevin, you have fond memories because of how he's treated you, but he's going to turn 90 years old.
I shared that with you yesterday. I mean, I met him several times over the years, and there's been big gaps in between different media day events and so on and so forth. And always remembers WKOK as one of the stations on the network when he was putting the network together, and he's very proud of that. And also remembers a lot of the people that were involved at the time, including myself. And I wasn't even involved at the time when we were first a Penn State affiliate. So it always means a lot to me that someone that you see once every 5 or 10 years still remembers you and who you're with.
I mean, the Penn State Sports Network, I have the privilege of being a part of, has its strength and longevity in the work of Ken Holder, Tom Holderman, Ken Holderman, Tom Bender, Mickey Bergstein, Bob Prince, John Sanders, Bill Zimfer, Gil Santos, John Grant, Jim Tarman, George Paterno, and of course, Fran Fischer. I mean, that's what, you know, I mean, and their ability to tell the story is over the years has been tremendous. And they've had a great story to tell, too.
One of the things I remember from Fran Fischer is Booker Moore. Just the way he said it every time he carried the football. That's what I associate with him. And he also, well, and the nicknames he'd come up with, and then some of them actually stuck.
Yeah, they did.
Choo-choo, yeah, they was did. That one of them?
Choo-choo McCoo.
Choo-choo McCoo.
Choo-choo McCoo. That was near the end. But he and George were a marvelous team together. They absolutely delighted fans with their stories, their recollections, how they worked together. And, you know, I mean, George passed away 11 years ago. But Fran's going to turn 90 years old. And I'll tell you right now, Fran is still sharp as a tack. I mean, you know, the mobility is not quite there the way it used to be. Okay, that's obvious. You know, so that's not quite, you know, so the mobility is not quite the same as it was. And uses a little more of a walker now. But he is, I saw him Saturday. And Jeff had told me, he says, hey, look, he says, said really, really important, you know, if you could make this. I said, well, yeah, I'm definitely going to make this. I'm going to go Friday night. I think it's like at 5 o'clock or something like that. But when you're talking, I mean, Fran goes back to a time when two games were on TV. The other nine were on radio. And, of course, he came through the first time through Castleman Chesley's, the one that got him to do voiceover on highlights for TV quarterbacks. And from there, Fran then got on as the analyst. He was the analyst for 4 years, and he worked with Mickey Bergstein, and Mickey passed away last year. And then Fran got his shot as the play-by-play guy starting in 1970. And those vintage years, I mean, you look at the 1973 team came back. And I talked with John Scorpion. I talked with Buddy Tessner. I talked with John Cappelletti, Mark Markovich, Eddie O'Neill. Those are the and John Scorpion was on the 72 team. But they all say the same thing, that how important Fran's support to them meant as the voice of the team, that they could sit down with them as young men, be interviewed by him, and feel like that there was a comfort on that set for TV quarterbacks. They'd be a comfort when they talked to him when they were doing a radio interview, where they could just kind of just relax and be themselves. And, you know, I think that, you know, when I hear that he's turned 90, and I, you know, every time I see him, I always make a point to stop and talk with him, because when I was in college, and you're trying to, you know, I remember I had a talk show, a weekly talk show in college on WDFM, and you try to get guests on, and, you know, guests, I had Matt Millen and Bruce Clark and Chuck Fucina, and, you know, and we did pretty well, but Fran came on as a regular guest from time to time. It's a college radio station. And he took the time to do something like that for somebody who's younger. And Fran always made fun, you know, self-deprecating about, well, you get two games of the game, two games of the price of one, the game that's on the field and the game I'm announcing. When you sit in that seat and you understand the traffic all around you, okay, game going on, working with an analyst, sideline guy, they're handing you cards and the whole thing. Look, it's, and I'm making it sound much more difficult than it is because it's not. At least to me, it's not. But you do understand how good that person was sitting in the chair before you. And Fran did one heck of a good job as a football play-by-play announcer. Really good.
Steve, I want to share this quick clip with you if we have time.
Sure.
I dug it up from what's known in Penn State history as the drive for the Rose Bowl back in 94.
Put it in for the touchdown and win. You just saw a great offensive football team reach down into their gut for 95 yards in the clutch.
They got Kajana Carter on the wing left and in motion to the right, and they give to Bill. Touchdown, Penn State! Yes, sir! Never a doubt!
That was the Illinois game.
Love that call.
Yep, that was the Illinois game. I mean, that's and he's going to turn 90 years old. He is a Penn State treasure in every way. When they needed him to go around the state, Fran went around this state. When they needed him to build the radio network, he built the radio network. When they needed him to build the Nittany Lion Club, he helped build the Nittany Lion Club. When they needed him to speak to a group because they needed good old Fran out there to speak to a group, make them feel good about the university and the football program, Fran was always there. You name the event he's gone to in his life, you know, all the events here, he's been to every, seen every sport every single time. He may not be a Penn State graduate, but he isn't the embodiment of what a Penn Stater is. And so with his 90th birthday coming up, I say with great affection, happy birthday to someone who has great meaning to me. We will come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a Ford Fiesta four-door sedan, SEL, $11,995. 2006 Pontiac Solstice two-door convertible, super low miles, only $15,521. A one-owner 2011 Hyundai Sonata 2.4-liter hybrid for just $17,387. 2012 Ford Econoline cargo van, fully serviced, $18,996. 2010 Ford Explorer Sport Track 4-door, $24,352. And a 2011 Lincoln MKX with a 6-year, 100,000-mile warranty, just $34,882. Call 888-536-8017.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24-7 at sunburymotors.com at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Hope everyone didn't mind that I took a few minutes to talk about Fran and George. You know, I think for many on a Saturday afternoon, whether it was sitting in the stadium listening to them or stopping by the tailgate show to talk with them or listening to them on a afternoon when you turned down the sound of the TV, they played a very important role in how people viewed their passion for Penn State football. Our number 800-795-9565, 800-795-9565. You know, so the Oklahoma State, the situation's a mess. Kevin's mentally on break till the Friday one comes out. That's the only one he seems to be interested in.
I'm interested in all. Friday's the one that disturbs me the most.
No. Come on, dog.
Friday's the one that disturbs me the most. I mean, that's just...
Again, let's just take it a step at a time and see whether or not it's true or not, okay? okay? It's one thing to have allegations, and it's another thing to have, because, again, some people may be telling the truth because this is exactly what happened. Okay. Or others may have an axe to grind, or others may feel their lot in life is bad because of the university, and this is their chance to give it. You don't know, okay? So that's why we all need to take a step back for a moment. Remember Duke lacrosse? The whole world was all wrapped up in Duke. I'm sorry. You mean it's not right? The whole world was upset with that Richard Jewell. He's innocent. See what I mean?
No, you're absolutely right.
So there are incidents that come up where the initial, wow, look at that, they're all guilty. No, you have to get all sides of the story. Remember Rashard Casey? Rashard Casey was absolutely guilty, right? Joe should not be playing Rashard Casey. Shouldn't be playing. Remember this?
I do.
He's just like everybody else. What do you mean he's innocent? Oh, what do you mean he got a $2.3 million settlement with the Hoboken Police Department for being falsely accused? Guess who's the one person who decided to get both sides of the story? That's why he played him. So before we jump off the bridge on something, you always have to get all sides first.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us today. I'm taking a look at each of the five parts of the Sports Illustrated series on Oklahoma State. Kevin evidently is only interested in one part.
Yeah, prostitution.
Wow, at least you admit it.
Well, listen, I mean, I've heard of everything else being alleged over the years that are in. I've never heard of anything like this being alleged.
You haven't?
No.
And I asked that in all seriousness. Really?
No, honestly, I haven't. I mean, we've all, everybody's being kind of tongue-in-cheek about it, but I've never heard it alleged before, you know, seriously.
Wow. I'm surprised.
I think that's why it disturbs me.
Wow. I find that stunning.
Why do you find that stunning?
Just do. All right. We're actually going to have somebody on from Ireland tomorrow night. On the show. From Damon's.
On All Steve Jones Thursday.
Now, the trick will be, and this could be a blow to my broadcasting career, is which one of us you can understand better. If it turns out it's the other guy, I need to quit.
Yes, you would. You would have a problem there. I saw the postseason schedule come out for Major League Baseball. I see TBS has just about every game besides the ALCS and World Series. And the World Series actually begins October 23rd. October 23rd. Just seems really late.
I went to the 2004 World Series, and I went October 24th to Game 2.
It just seems really, really late. They won't be playing on, or they will. Game 7 could be on Halloween. Not that that really matters. I just thought it was an interesting little caveat.
So Game 2 would be what day?
Let's see. Game 1 will be played at the home of the Yale Champs. Game 3 would be on Saturday the 26th, so I'm guessing Thursday the 24th.
Hmm. That's weird, because when I went to Game 2 9 years ago, it was October 24th.
Okay, I'm just saying, it seems late.
It's the exact same schedule as 9 years ago.
Fine, 9 years ago it seemed late. That's, I don't care. My point is, baseball in late October is wrong. You shouldn't be playing baseball when the calendar's about ready to flip into November.
Well, there's only one of two ways to solve that.
Get rid of the wild card. But I like the wild card, so you know I can't do that.
Shorten the season. Or start earlier.
Ugh, you have snow outs now.
I'm just saying, that's the only way to solve it.
I'm okay with a shorter season.
So am I.
I think the season's just too long now.
I mean, I'd go to Labor Day.
Yes, I like that idea. Then you'd have the postseason done by September. And you wouldn't have guys wearing ear flaps in center field on their hats. That's wrong. That should never happen again. No one should wear ear flaps with a baseball cap in a baseball game.
Does anything make you happy?
Yeah, believe it or not, some things do. I'll let you know when I find one.
I'm waiting.
I mean, really, do you want to go to a baseball game, a game six on October 29th in Pittsburgh, potentially? Do you really want to see a baseball game when the average weather, when the average weather conditions are in the 40, or the temperatures in the 40s?
Yo, dog, I'm watching on TV. I'm not going this year.
I mean, think about it. The American League teams could be Boston, Detroit, and Oakland. Not necessarily warm weather cities.
Not exactly the banana belt.
Right. Now, the National League teams are almost as bad. Not quite. You have Atlanta. That's okay. St. Louis, eh. You know, Pittsburgh right now. And then the Dodgers and Arizona. Well, Arizona's out of it. I'm sorry. It's just the Dodgers. I mean, baseball's supposed to be a warm weather sport. If you're playing it in October, it's too late.
When did you stop being a fan?
Talk about role reversal. I stopped being a fan somewhere around the All-Star break when my team was mathematically eliminated from the next 3 years playoffs. That's when I stopped being a fan. Pirates lead Texas, by the way, 6-3, bottom of the seventh, going for his sweep.
Sweep, yeah. I was doing the game last night, and the crowd's chanting, Vatos Gatos. Let's go, Cats.
Right.
So I said to somebody, I said, so what's the Vatos Gatos deal? They're like, oh, yeah, it's all Spanish. Well, let's go, Cats. You know, they just kind of caught on. The people up here, they love it. They love it. So it's first and third last night, two outs, big moment. They could take the lead, win the game. Right? I guess it was to win the game. He hit down the first, and Washington picked it up. He says, Vatos Gatos, buenas noches. Good night.
See, now I got to be multilingual to go to a baseball game.
I thought it was clever.
It is. It is very, funny.
Evidently, you hate it.
No, it is very funny.
When did you stop being a fan?
I told you, right around the All-Star break.
I mean, are you only a fan when your team's doing well?
Almost. I mean, really, almost.
I mean, things have changed dramatically. I remember growing up. I think I knew every player on almost every team. And I'm talking about NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball. I collected baseball cards. I still have some of them. They're in a box somewhere. Okay. But, you know, but I knew who everybody was. I could give you the Cleveland Browns starting lineup. You know, from Frank Ryan to Gary Collins to Paul Warfield to Jim Brown to Gene Hickerson at guard, to, you know, I mean, things like that, right?
Sure.
You know, I mean, the NHL, I mean, I could tell you that, you know, Carol Vadney played for the Oakland Seals and Charlie Hodge was their goaltender, you know, I mean, things like that.
I can't say I know too many people that could do that, quite honestly. Right.
No, but I'm just saying, though, but in the NBA, same thing. Baseball, I knew who was on every team. Who was traded? Why? I mean, I followed it that closely. You know, now I know who's on teams out of professional necessity. But when I sit down and I go online, the first thing I look at when I want to look at Major League Baseball is I want to see how, you know, and to those who are Philly fans or Pirate fans or whatever, I grew up in New England, so I grew up as a lifelong Red Sox fan. Okay? Went to my first game at Fenway Park when I was 5 years old, 1963. And saw Mantle and Maris each homer. The Yankees beat the Red Sox. And, you know, but that's where I go now. And I know a lot of things, like, in depth about my team. And I think that's the way sports has now trended. You look at talk radio in New York, and it's been like this for a while. And I was talking to Patrick McEnroe about this. And PMAC was saying to me, he says, you know, he says, I really only, you know, he says, I only deal with really the Knicks, the Yankees, the Mets, the Giants, Jets. He says, Rangers. He says, we don't delve about national stuff that often. And that's what you're seeing, because that's what people are interested in now. We'll delve into some national stuff, like throw some stuff in there about the Dodgers or whatever. But the fans in our area, for better or worse, want to talk about the Phillies. They want to talk about the Eagles. They want to talk about the Steelers, Penn State, Pirates.
Sometimes the Mets.
Yeah, I mean, well, you still have some cable influence in here. There's still some people that get the New York stations here.
Yeah, Mets and Yankees because of the ease of watching the games. Right.
Right, and there are a lot of Yankees fans in northeastern Pennsylvania in particular.
And as much as I hate to admit it, there's several Ravens fans because as you get further south, you're more likely to get the Ravens games toward the Harrisburg area.
The Ravens are an interesting part of this. The Ravens are as regional a team as I've seen in the NFL. There really is a 50-mile radius around Baltimore. And outside of that 50-mile radius, I don't know of any Raven fans anywhere.
Well, there's a lot of teams around them, though. I mean, if you think about it, the Eagles aren't far away, the Steelers aren't far away, the Redskins aren't far away.
See, what happened was that when the Colts moved to Indianapolis, there was a void in Baltimore for, what, 13 years?
Sure.
10, something like that? Well, they all found other teams to root for while lamenting the loss of the Colts. And the Ravens filled a void, but still, and you're right, they're caught in a little corridor there.
Allie Stevens is a perfect example of someone who is an Eagles fan that grew up in the Baltimore area, but it was either the Eagles or the Redskins because there was no team in Baltimore when her roots were being forged, if you will, to be which team would be your favorite team.
Exactly.
Sarah Bartlett, who's a little bit younger, came in when the Ravens were, you know, as she was coming into time to pick a team, the Ravens were there. So it was easy for her to pick the Ravens.
Right.
I use that because those are two people, the perfect examples of what we're talking about.
And I think what's happened is people have zeroed in on their teams. And they really don't. There's so many teams now, I think it's hard for everybody to look at all the teams across the country. How about that?
That's a very good point. I mean, look at college football on a Saturday. I could focus on one team a lot because that was the only game I got. Now I get a whole bunch of games, and there's actually too many for me to be able to follow. I don't know how you growing up could have been able to know all of the players on all the teams because I can't do that now.
Pure interest. pure interest.
I mean, I'm looking at it from a different point of view than you are, though.
Yeah, pure interest, love of it, and so forth. But it's more than that because it's a little bit different for me now because, you know, because I'm broadcasting games now. So I really have to hone in. And, you know, I mean, take, for example, Texas A&M, Alabama. I'm not going to be able to watch the game on Saturday. I thought, to be frank with you, I thought the game was at night. I thought it was an 8 o'clock game. All right, be done at 9.
Until I saw it. Yeah.
I didn't realize it was a 3:30 game. I won't be able to see any of it. Now, am I lamenting that? Would I rather watch Texas A&M, Alabama, and not broadcast Penn State, Central Florida? It's not even close. I could give a darn about Texas A&M, Alabama. You know, I want to broadcast the game. I'm excited about broadcasting the game. I think this will be a really good game. But I don't get a chance to see as many games because of that. How about that?
Well, it goes back to what we were talking about with fantasy football. If I'm not a stakeholder in it, I'm going to watch bits and pieces of it, and that's it. But if I feel as though I have a stake in the game, then I'm going to watch it a lot more intently. And maybe I'm the one that's unusual in this particular situation.
No, I think you're typical of how people are now. I think that I've mentioned several times how the fantasy football, baseball, NASCAR, whatever it happens to be, has enhanced fan enjoyment because they can target certain players and they'll be watching other games besides their team. I think that's about the only way it happens now. I mean, I used to, you know, I watch games for pure enjoyment all the time myself, Kev, because I love watching the games. And I love the sports themselves. But I think for most people, for casual fans, I think the fantasy football, baseball, NASCAR thing, whatever it happens to be, has increased viewership and interest exponentially because you really root for your team, and because you have targeted players that you have an interest in, it allows you then to look at other games differently. How about that?
Yeah, and I'll watch other games, but I won't. I'm not as intense or into it or whatever, however you want to describe it. And I know there's some friends of mine that are the same way. They'll watch a lot of games, but I have to be a stakeholder in it for some reason. I mean, I watch Big Ten games because I'm a Penn State fan. So, you know, I feel as though there's a stake in that because I want to know what's going on. But am I going to watch, well, the USC game, USC-Washington State? I heard the score of that, and I thought, wow, I wish I would have tuned that in. I wouldn't have tuned it in for any other reason.
I did watch it. I did watch some of that. But I had a baseball playoff game first, so I didn't get home to watch any other games. So I was in the mood that when I got home from the baseball game Saturday night, because I did the football game in the afternoon, and I broadcast that, and I broadcast the baseball playoff game at night. So I did double duty that day. So I got home, and I was really wanted to just sit down, have something cold, and just watch a game. And it turned out I started watching that game and thought, yeah, this is bizarro land. I thought that they were USC and didn't need any help.
Well, part of you just deep down wants to root against USC anyway. Yeah, I mean, you know, I admit that freely.
Hey, Lane's an interesting guy. But
I think
people target what they have, and that's why ESPN, to its credit, does. I mean, look, they have ESPN Boston, ESPN New York, ESPN Chicago, ESPN Los Angeles, ESPN Dallas. I think that's been a brilliant strategy on their part because I think they get where fan viewership's going now.
Right. You have your hometown, and you can target all the information on that right to your team.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Listen, I know we have a break coming up, but I want, and we're running out of time, but I want to get into your thoughts on the $100,000 Sue fine. So maybe we could do that after the break real quick.
Take a timeout on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Dominguez Sue gets fined $100,000. I think part of this fine is because he is in the category of repeat offender.
That makes sense. I mean, I've seen the play, and if he's blocking a guy, he happens to be blocking a guy whose number tells you that he's not going to be fast enough to catch the guy from behind. I understand that. But I don't want to tell a player, don't make a block just because he's a few yards behind the play. If he makes the block above the waist, Steve, is there a fine or is there even any discussion about it?
I'm not sure. I think the fact that it's him has a lot to do with it. How about that?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I think the fact that he went down toward the knee is a lot of why there's a discussion about it right now and why it's $100,000 to the NFL's favorite charity.
Right. So, I think that that's where we are.
And you got to play to the whistle, but you know that you know undercutting. I never liked an undercut block anyway. And,
oh no, I don't
or a
either.
Tackle
I,
for that matter.
No, but. I don't either. I think that's all wrong. But
I also don't think that the NFL needs to make a rule that says don't undercut anybody below the knee or below the waist now to make a tackle. Because now you're really making it difficult on the defense to actually make a tackle. Not only can you not touch a receiver before the ball gets there, but now you can't hit them above the shoulders and you can't hit them below the waist. It's like, why don't you just let them catch the ball, run a few yards, and then finally be able to tackle them?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's all in player safety, but sometimes I think you can take it a little too far now.
You think?
And maybe but the other side of that, Steve, is, and I see the other side of this, maybe it's the player's fault for changing the way they, instead of launching themselves because they're not allowed to do that anymore, they're going to do the undercut instead. So maybe it's the player's fault in general for the rule to come out, or at least to be discussed.
Sure. All right.
I got a feeling you checked out halfway through that.
Huh?
Exactly.
What?
That's what I thought.
Huh. Okay, what part do you want to talk about again?
It's too late. Go back and listen to the archive at stevejonesshow.com. Catch up.
I'm kind of busy. I've got the New York Penn League Championship Series tonight. What do you want me to do? Cut grass?
That's what I'll be doing. Hell, maybe not with the rain.
Huh?